We would like to acknowledge that Politics with a Pin-Up was recorded upon Kaurna country. Sovereignty of this land was never ceded. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. While at Politics with a Pin-Up, we try to make lighthearted fun of the state of the world around us. We acknowledge that some of the content in today's recording is distressing to some listeners. Here at Politics with a Pin-Up, we stand by the values that Black Lives Matter, women's rights are human rights, trans rights are human rights, no human is illegal, science is real, and love is love.
Politics with a Pin-Up podcast. This is Moisty's attempt to use her political science degree and love of shit talking to create an engaging and educational space. This is politics through the educated eyes of a stripper. Each episode covers three main segments: the unpacking of a political concept or theory, updates on world news and events, and how Moisty thinks key political figures would act within a strip club. And now, putting the ho in host, Moisty Magic.
Welcome back. Episode 2 of Politics with a Pin-Up. Wow, you survived the first week. I'm really proud of you. You've made it through 40 minutes of me shit talking and you've come back for more. Good on you. So, episode 2, I am so lucky to be joined by the incredible Ms. Leather 2020 Cherry.
Hi.
Hi, Cherry. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, thank you. Excited to be here. A little nervous.
Oh, look, we're all a bit nervous. It's because I'm not wearing underwear, isn't it?
Why would that make me nervous?
Cherry has an incredible resume. They are a sex worker. They are also the committee member for the Adelaide Leather and Fetish Community and a board member for SARAA. Look, reading letters is hard, which is the South Australian Rainbow Advocacy Alliance. They are also part of my team, which is non-binary people taking out gendered titles, which I think is hilarious because, you know, secretly what the gay agenda is about.
Yeah, you know, infiltration and elimination from the inside.
Yeah, taking the cis people's titles away. What are they going to do? I'm Miss Burlesque. Yes, I am a woman. So as most of you probably have figured out, I am a stripper, which is one facet of the sex industry. But Cherry has a very different experience with the sex industry. Would you like to tell us what your role is, what your experiences of being a sex worker have been?
Sure. I've been in the industry for a bit over 10 years now. Started in Rub and Tug, you know, that whole stereotype.
The old massage.
Yeah. Naked massage, body slide, flip them over. Yeah. Extra 50 for the blowjob.
I lived with a housemate who was doing that, and the smell of baby oil when she would finish a shift was just like, go in the shower.
Baby oil and butt cracks.
Oh, for me, it's Hello Kitty body spray.
Oh.
And baby wipes.
Yeah.
And stinky pleasers.
Yeah. But you know, Rub and Tug actually takes a toll on your body. It's a lot of work. People don't realize. Especially within the industry, and you've got the hierarchy, sort of like Rub and Tug's one of those, oh, but you're not really a sex worker, but you are, but you're doing this, but you're not necessarily having sex, so that doesn't make you a sex worker, but it does. You are providing a sexual service.
Absolutely.
You are dealing with clients.
In the same way that people don't view strippers as sex workers, but we're providing a sexual service, and if you think that sex equates to penis in vagina, I feel really sorry for you and your sex life.
You have a very narrow life.
Yeah. How is missionary with the lights off going for you?
So, yeah, after a number of years doing that, I decided that my back and neck hurt, so I'm going to go do full service.
Fantastic.
And did that for a number of years as well. I found I do really well with the girlfriend experience, so that's that more, you know, not necessarily porn star type that, you know, people go and expect. I'm going to have the skinniest, you know, biggest boobed, size 6, double D bust, you know, 5 foot 2.
I feel very attacked right now.
But you're not blonde.
Sorry, I'm not blonde. I'm blonde under the hair colour. I'm blonde mentally.
You're also a little tall though, so.
Oh, I am a little bit tall. And I like to wear the big pleasers.
Yeah.
Men are like, I like short women. And I'm like, I don't care what men like.
But yeah, where I really found my strength was in the more connective style of sex work. So it is that bit more intimate, you know, cuddles and holding of hands and, you know, a bit more conversation based. So it sort of crosses over into that bit of, you know, counselling side of things as well. Like I had quite a number of older gentlemen and people who had recently gone through a divorce. So it was re-engaging with other people's bodies again and learning how to discover somebody else's curves and getting back into their own sexuality. But the area that I probably love the most is fetishes, kinks, BDSM, which I also do in my own personal life. I'm a lifestyler as well as a worker. And pro-doming, I do not go by mistress. Please, no one ever mention that word in my vicinity. I am a sir.
My experiences with, perhaps I'm need to be better educated, but my experiences is that kink for those who don't spend enough time in it is very gendered and gender normative.
Yeah, so it very much can be, and it can be very, you know, cis heteronormative. But there are wonderful pockets of LGBTQI plus communities within the kink and BDSM scene. You know, being a leather person myself, you know, that is an area that I quite enjoy. I'm very sadistic in what I do, but it's more of the, you know, mental side of the sadism as opposed to I'm just going to hurt you until you cry.
You do great in politics.
I know.
Oh, the look on Cherry's face right now. I'm genuinely terrified and aroused all at once.
I mean, I have sat in rooms with politicians and discussed the importance of decriminalizing sex work, and they don't scare me.
I think without throwing anyone under the bus, sex workers and politicians definitely override each other and spend a lot of time in each other's companies, even though one party in that would never, ever acknowledge that openly.
Correct. Mm. But, yeah, I love the kink and fetish side. I love exploring, you know, different ways to experience sexuality. It's not just P&V. You know, for me, sex isn't about, you know, the intimate act of intercourse. It's also about the mind and the head fuck that can go with it, or the connection that you can have through an amazing, beautiful rope scene. And, you know, you can have this super intense, amazing impact scene or, you know, pet play or whatever, and it doesn't have to end in sex. Sex is not the end point. It's not always the desired outcome. And that's one of the things I love most about BDSM and kink.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Incredible insight, and I will share a few links. Our producer will share a few links for people to educate themselves better on where to find safe and consensual kink within both South Australia and Australia more broadly. Are you ready to talk about politics?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Excellent. So we are doing a two-parter this week and next week, looking at Australian politics. Because I come from a land down under, we are going to unpack what it's like living in Australia and what the beast of Australian politics really is, you know, how it works, how it functions, and all that shit, really. I apologise in advance. This week we are going into the boring theory of it, and I know it's a bunch of big wanky words, it's a bunch of, like, tosspot, but it will make sense, I promise you.
Being that it's, like, the land down under, does that mean all of our politics is also toxic or poisonous?
Oh, absolutely. And backwards. Upside down, backwards. Yeah, much like our animals, very toxic and poisonous. I mean, have you seen Malcolm Roberts?
Yes, unfortunately.
Is he still a thing?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm probably like...
I hope not.
Oh, God. Oh, I hate it. So, Australia is a liberal democracy. What does that mean? Well, it's the most common style of governance for Western countries. Breaking that down, it's basically surrounded by the goals of liberalism, which is another word for freedom. We can cue here all the people being like, my freedoms, my rights, my freedoms. Liberalism, which is freedom, and democracy, which is based upon the idea that the citizens participate in governance and either directly or through elective representatives. Within Australia, it is via elective representatives. And so one of the main parts of a liberal democracy is that the government is free and fair and is created with checks and balances. Basically, someone to keep their shit in line, you know?
Like one of those difficult clients?
Yeah, yeah, like a security guard with the difficult client. Yeah. Yeah, look, someone to swat their hands away when they get a bit too, like, into it. Oh, God. I just thought about
trauma.
A hand. Oh, God. Oh, please don't touch me. I'm not getting paid enough. So, free and fair. So, the checks and balances in Australia is, and again, a lot of big boring words, I understand. We have a government which is split into three pieces. So legislative, executive and judiciary. So your legislative is your parliament and that is, again, divided into two sections. Your House of Representatives and your Senate. We'll go into that a bit later. And then your executive, which is your cabinet, so with the prime minister, deputy prime minister, ministers for blah, blah, blah. And then your judiciary, which is your High Court of Australia. Following, we good? Excellent. Three parts. It's all fucked. They're all wankers. So Australia's unique system is a fusion of the UK and the US. It's like we got two terrible countries and smashed them together to make Australia.
It's like that awkward parenting when the parents don't get along but they've got to hang around for the benefit of the children.
It is. Oh, God, I didn't even think of it. I was just thinking of foods from the US and the UK that we could smash together to make something terrible and call it Australian politics. I was like, Earl Grey hot dog?
Ooh. You know, there's probably a Japanese Kit Kat that has that flavour.
Oh, God. But they'd make it taste good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, UK, US, both like genocide of Indigenous people. Both like imperialism. Both like electing terrible leaders. You have Bojo, Trump/Biden, pretty much awful, and ScoMo.
They're like the wannabe toxic daddy doms in the kink scene.
I hate that. I was thinking the Three Stooges, but fascist.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, because now I've got the mental image of all of them being dressed as doms, daddy doms. Yeah. And I think ScoMo with a daddy collar. Daddy ScoMo can't hurt you, but me to my therapist. What if he's real? So we have a fusion of those two. So the US system, we've taken federalism, which is your state systems. Basically, we've become the United States of Australia. We've also taken your written constitution, which is terms and conditions of Australia, and that's written down somewhere in a cabinet and in Parliament House. And then we also have, and I Googled how to say this word earlier and now I've forgotten, strong biomaternalism, which is essentially splitting your legislative system into two. So your House of Reps and your Senate. We see that in America where they have the Senate and the House of Reps. But, I mean, again, a little bit different. And then from the UK, we've stolen the fused executive, which means that your executive government, our cabinet, is taken from the legislative house, as opposed to it being a separate entity, which you would see in America. And then, of course, the monarchy, because we love the Queen. It's definitely relevant that we have the Queen still ruling us, you know, in 2021.
I mean, we needed that crusty old biddy to tell us what to do, didn't we?
We do. We definitely need the Queen to tell us what to do. Without that, we'd be so lost.
Yay, colonialism.
Oh, I love it, right? It's only 2021. So that's a very, very brief overview of kind of the systems of how Australian politics works. You also have a tiered system. So like I was saying with federalism, we have the overall federal politics, We then have our state politics, and then we have our local politics. And for a while there, there was an argument that state politics was kind of a bit useless. It was kind of that middle ground that we should just have federal and local. And since COVID kicked off, we've seen state politics become the biggest issue within politics. You know, border closures, redirection of funding, redirection of vaccines. State politics is probably the hottest topic. It's overriding federal politics at this time.
Basically, the federal have just wiped their hands of it and gone, you states deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless it comes to the vaccine rollout. And then ScoMo wanted to look fantastic, so he took it over and fucked it up.
As he always does.
As he always does. So, speaking of vaccines, it's episode 2 and I was like, do we get into it? Fuck it. Let's get into it. Let's talk about vaccine hesitancy. So when we throw back to last week, how we talked about what is politics, and we decided that the best definition we were going to use on this podcast is politics is the system of deciding who gets what, when, and how. We realized how much it really does affect everything. In the midst of a global pandemic, vaccines have become a hot political issue, really. But it's nothing really new. Vaccine hesitancy has been around, God, looking at my research, since the days of smallpox, since the days of many, many other diseases that we've managed to eradicate via vaccines. And the reason that I've asked Cherry here to talk to me about vaccine hesitancy is around about the 1990s, there was a anti-vaccination sentiment.
Today, Junior!
That kind of got pushed, where a doctor released a paper linking autism to vaccines or vaccines to autism. This was actually falsified. The doctor was paid to produce this paper by the anti-vax lobbying group. But it really created a narrative around autism and vaccinations. And I've invited Cherry here because Cherry is a neurodiverse person. And I feel like we need to center the voices of neurodiverse people within the anti-vax debate because they were the ones that have been really heavily stigmatized because of it. You know?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me.
Anytime. So, are you vaccinated?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Pfizer?
Double Pfizer.
Double Pfizer.
I was in the, 1B group.
Also 1B. Fantastic. Two shots. I didn't have many side effects. I was quite happy.
Yeah, I was just a little bit flu-y and that was fine.
Yeah, I think I had a headache after the second one. Very relieved. I cannot state how much relief I had after the second vaccine. To just be like, okay, I'm covered. We're currently COVID-free in South Australia. But if it happens to come, I am covered. Well, as much as you can be. I guess it's really brought up, I mean, as we were saying, vaccine hesitancy is nothing new. There's nothing inherently new about it. It's been coming around. Looking at some of them, there were reports in the 1800s about vaccines. Oh, ever since they've existed, people have been pushing back against it and pushing back. And I guess it goes to show that people are scared of new things. We don't like change.
No.
We don't like change at all. But still, there's been so many diseases that have been eradicated due to it.
Yeah, it's one of the real miracles of modern science was the development of vaccines and the testing of them and the research that went into it. Right back from when that little boy's arm was cut and cowpox was put into it to inoculate against smallpox.
Absolutely. And I guess now that we have more technology to be able to check on who is vaccinated, things like vaccine passports, and it's becoming more and more politicized because people don't want their health records to be a matter of public knowledge.
And look, I do understand that, you know, as a sex worker, it's my privacy is really important.
Oh, absolutely.
And having my details out there for everyone to see is really anxiety driven.
Absolutely. Well, there was the introduction of the My Health Records,
yes,
a couple of years ago, which some of the sex work agencies around Australia were really pushing forward to be like, opt out, because if you talk to your doctor about sex work related things, that will be on your record.
Yeah.
And knowing the stigma in our society around what we do, it was really important to keep ourselves covered. But this is more like a global pandemic changes everything.
Yeah, my anxiety isn't more important than the health of our community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that's the thing that we need to remember is the community. It is a community effort. Like, even though I might be resistant, look, I'm not resistant to the vaccine. I've put a lot of shit in my body over the years. I don't care. Just inject me with it. Like, there's not much that I'm scared of putting in my body at this point because I willingly date men.
I mean, without going down the path of recreational drugs, just food and alcohol alone.
It, to be honest, though, it's always the ones that love a recreational drug that are like, I don't know what's in it. I don't trust what's in it. But I'll snort this. Like, okay, right. Thing is, it's tested. Like, it's tested. It's FDA approved. Australia has a much more rigorous testing program. That's why it's taken longer for them to come over. That's why it's taken longer for us to get Moderna as opposed to AstraZeneca and Pfizer. And that's fine. You can look up the ingredients. There's so much science behind it, but there's still that little voice in the back of society's mind that is, don't trust it.
Don't trust the government.
No one wants to trust the government.
No.
I'm not going to get on a podcast and be like, the government is great, we need to trust them. I fully advocate for being suspicious of what your government's doing. But if the government wanted to fuck with your rights, they would do it openly. They wouldn't get a vaccine and hide it behind some bill. The majority of people who are like ranting about this vaccine are white. The government's not going to fuck with your rights. They're already doing it. It's just not with white people.
I mean, we just need to look at what they're doing with the low-income cards that they're wanting to bring in, the cashless cards.
Oh, absolutely.
They're taking away the rights and autonomy of people.
On welfare. Blatantly. And it's always in high Indigenous population areas as well. And, yeah, the government's track record on Indigenous rights, appalling. We literally had a genocide. And we did it openly through government policy. There's no conspiracy. If the government wants to fuck with human rights, they're going to do it. We also see that with our refugee policy. It's, again, quite openly a violation of international law, but we'll do it. So I think that really debunks that idea that the government is slowly eroding our rights.
It's kind of like the vaccine's going to have this GPS tracker in it. Yet everyone's walking around with smartphones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, no one gives a fuck what you're doing. I don't want to be rude, but the idea that you've got a GPS tracker in you and the government is super interested in what you do is kind of delusions of grandeur. Like, come on. No one gives a fuck what Dave's doing on his day-to-day basis.
If they really want to know, they can follow and I'll send them the bill for the videos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, maybe we should just live video cast ourselves. People would be into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I figured if we have another lockdown, I'm just going to take a shit ton of mushrooms and put a live stream in my lounge room and see what happens.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. Just 24-hour live stream.
Oh. Joe Rogan might come to me again. Is that the word of the day? Ding, 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 ding. We said Joe Rogan. Therefore, if you've tuned into the word of the day, you win a prize.
Is it a sexy prize?
No, it's not sexy. Oh. It'd probably be a nude, but with my face, with Joe Rogan's face shopped onto my body. It's some deer steaks. It's ivermectin.
I mean, considering who is taking the ivermectin, I'm actually okay with that.
I mean, yeah, you touched on it. We were talking before and you touched on a really interesting point about one of the concerns with the vaccine is infertility. And the same population of people are taking ivermectin, which, again, leads to infertility.
Yeah, it's the irony is just – the irony is strong with that one.
Look, again, you could listen to the science or you could just make up your own shit. Let's see who lives at the end of the day.
But social media.
Of course, social media. It's almost this really interesting narrative where you can provide, I've had a conversation with the strip club DJ about this, who will not take the vaccine over his dead body, I believe. I can't wait to have him as a guest on the podcast. It's going to be half an hour of us yelling at each other. And quite happily pulled up a few stats, you know, World Health Organization, these sort of things, to be like, well, this is, you know, this is what happens when you have the vaccine. You're more covered against the severity of COVID. You're more covered by this, that, the other. And he's just like, no, that's bias.
What bias? Where is the bias?
Left-wing bias.
Oh!
Left-wing bias. It seems to be this disconnect from reality that...
Oh, is that the appendix that's attached to the gay agenda, is it?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Right.
I didn't get the note about that.
Right.
I didn't get the note about taking over the world via vaccines as part of the gay agenda. I'm very disappointed. Has there been an argument that vaccines turn you gay?
Well, I don't know about vaccines, but apparently, like, pesticides and GMOs and stuff like that turn the frogs gays, which... is turning everybody else gay.
Oh, I love that. That's Alex Jones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
Wow. Do they have little frog pride flags?
I don't know, but in my house we do.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
I love that for you. Back to vaccine hesitancy. I wanted to bring up again the movement in the 90s because I guess we are seeing more and more people, as we have a better understanding of the brain and psychology and how things work, we're seeing more and more people being diagnosed as neurodiverse, and we're seeing less stigma around this. And yeah, it's just such an interesting topic to think that that was the worst thing that you could have had your child diagnosed as autistic. I think Hannah Gatsby really summed it up when she talked about having... you would rather a dead child than an autistic one.
Yeah, and I love Hannah. That was...
It's a really, really powerful special.
Yeah.
Even when that paper has been come out that it's been falsified, the author got paid $20,000 or something?
Yeah.
Would that even cover your uni debt to have your doctorate?
No.
No. Like, what? So this person's lost all of their qualifications in academia for $20,000.
Yeah, they've been disbarred.
They still have to pay the debt and they get $20,000. What? I mean, it must have seemed really appealing at the time.
It must have, but the problem is once, you know, the misinformation is out there, you can't pull it back.
You can't. You can't unfuck that puppy.
No. I'm going with Black Mirror. You can't unfuck the pig if we're sticking with politics here.
I love that. Absolutely. Reference to David Cameron. David Cameron? David Cameron allegedly was caught fucking a pig in his university days, allegedly. And now Black Mirror, a popular show on the Red streaming service, parodied this. It's an interesting time to be alive.
So just before we do go on, for anybody who's listening who doesn't really understand what neurodivergence is, it's people's whose brain doesn't necessarily operate in what is considered a typical way. So that's people with ADHD, autism, dyslexia, DID, DPD.
There's also one that's numbers.
Just calculus.
Yeah.
Yep. So dyslexia is so broad. The overarching umbrella is dyslexia, but that can be broken down into dyspraxia, dyscalculus, and I have forgotten what the oral version is. Not the oral, but oral.
Oral? Oral? Different to oral.
Yeah.
Oral.
I charge extra for that.
And it is a spectrum as well. So... I'm currently in the process of seeking a diagnosis for adult ADHD.
I have that diagnosis. I also have the diagnosis of dyslexia. I live with PTSD, and it is strongly suspected by a number of professionals that I have autism as well. However, I can't afford the $300 to $600 it costs to go and have a test.
Of course, because mental health doesn't need to be covered by Medicare, not at all. And it is becoming more and more, because the medical industry was modelled on cis white men, it's becoming more and more that those femme-presenting or those assigned female at birth are having more experiences of being diagnosed later in life. I've experienced this with my sister, has been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. I suspect there's probably many others in my family. Yeah, it's important to acknowledge that it's something that was deeply stigmatized in the 90s, and this discourse definitely didn't help, but it's now becoming more and more normalized and more, it's just a thing that we do and exist in this world with.
Absolutely. And it was sort of inflated by organizations that are supposed to be there as support groups but aren't. I'm not going to name who it is, but they are represented by a puzzle piece, so anybody in the know knows.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is that, well, this is a traumatic event that you've gone through. Your child now has autism. You know, I'm sorry, this is such an end of the world type thing. Now, this is how we're going to try and cure it. Or that organisation is all about finding the cure.
Absolutely.
rather than supporting the people with these lived experiences.
I think because complex PTSD, so another type of, the mutation of PTSD, because we left it too long and it mutated, kind of like COVID, presents very much like a neurodiverse spectrum disorder, that you do have those crossovers where people think that trauma can cause certain behaviours, but it's not. Sometimes it's just the wiring in the brain. And there's also nothing wrong with that. We need a society where there is lots of inclusivity and lots of people, which I guess really brings back that, back to the vaccines, about the ableism within anti-vaccine community.
Yeah, it's really scary, actually. And it is predominantly like the anti-vaxxers. The stereotype is your middle-aged white mum.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And able-bodied, not immunocompromised, probably middle class, so could afford access to medicine, could afford to have time off, these things.
Yeah.
Where unfortunately, COVID and any sort of disease and any sort of thing that we vaccinate for is going to affect pandemics, diseases, these things. They only mirror a society that we've created, so they affect those who are the most vulnerable.
When I stop and think about it, like, it is really hard-hitting to think that there are people out there who believe that I, as a neurodiverse person, is the worst possible thing that could potentially happen. And it's like, I have this amazing life and experiences.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you're holding off vaccinating because you're scared with these unfounded, you know, claims that it's going to cause autism. Yet people with autism are amazing. We have rich, fulfilled lives.
And isn't it that, I mean, look, I am the worst possible thing to happen to a parent. Just ask my parents. But that has nothing to do with my brain chemicals, just my awful personality. but more and more there is coming out that many, like, people that we've looked up to in society are neurodiverse.
I am having a mind
I
blank
can't
now.
Think. Yeah, look, blame the ADHD.
Yeah. I actually have one of the things associated with my ADHD is a condition, and I can never remember the name of it, which is ironic because it is the condition for forgetting words.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
I love that for you. Oh, that's amazing.
Like, I know the word's there.
I know the word means. But I can't think of the word for forgetting words.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it just manifests differently in different people, but also those different experiences make a rich tapestry of society. I really hope I get the Joker thing again. We live in a society. So we wanted to look at, we were also touching on before we started recording, some of the protests in Melbourne or in Narum about vaccines and the construction industry.
Yeah.
I was desperately looking online to find the list of demands that the tradies wanted.
Scrolling away on the keyboard.
Just come on, come on. I know one of them was the resignation of Daniel Andrews, the Premier. They, on top of the vaccine mandate, and again, it's a grey area with the vaccine mandate. it does lead a slippery slope into body autonomy and what the government has a choice in our lives. But at the same time, the greater good and, you know, like, I think that the vaccine, like, as opposed to, personally, if as opposed to having a vaccine mandate, the government should have done more for positive reinforcement. There's been no information campaigns. There's been no pushing.
No.
It's just been like, here it is. Don't get AstraZeneca. Okay, you can get AstraZeneca. Get it now. You better get it. And I'm like, with a lot more information, we wouldn't be in this situation. The tradies pushing for the vaccine, against the vaccine mandate, also would ask for an unlimited supply of ivermectin.
Like a pony. I'm a pony. I'm a pony. Don't you feel like a pony? Don't you feel like a pony when you sweat? Oh, yeah.
I really wish that I could get an unlimited supply of horse drugs with my job.
It'd be party, wouldn't it?
I don't think I'd get any work done. I did a stripper on ketamine, just like, nah, it's the Melvin Cup.
I mean, if you're going to be taking the horse drugs, you have to try and work out what kind of horse you're going to be.
What kind of horse? I would, a show pony?
Yeah, definitely.
I'd be a horse on ketamine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A mess.
A mess.
You'd
a
be BoJack.
Oh, God, I hate that BoJack relates way too much to me. There's been so much that we could go into with vaccines and vaccine hesitancy. It's such a huge area. Do you have a takeaway message that you could give to people? I mean, for me, I think if those who are concerned about getting the vaccine, my thing would be take the time to read articles, look at sources that you know, like the World Health Organization. I really recommend The Independent as yeah. well as The Conversation in terms yeah. of those places to talk about, yeah, it's okay to have hesitancy, but to educate yourself on what you're actually putting in your body. Is there anything that you have to take away a message?
Yeah, I always recommend, you know, talking to your local health professional. Even if it's not your GP, somebody with some experience that you trust, but also talk to your friends and families. Talk about what it is that you're anxious, because you know, some of them may be feeling the same anxieties, and you can talk it through together, go through this process together and support each other. And, you know, the reason we have this vaccine is to, you know, protect us as well as our friends and family.
Absolutely, absolutely. And take some time to look at the stats as well. It may, while we're in a COVID-free situation in South Australia, it may seem like it's an unnecessary thing, but, you know, you look other places and you see how much it's made a difference in terms of hospitalisation rates and things like that. I think it's, yeah, absolutely. Talk to people. Yeah. Inform yourself and inform yourself from lots of different sources. Get lots of different opinions and really just take that time. Okay, Cherry, my favourite part of the podcast. What would you do if you had Malcolm Turnbull try and book you as a client? What do you think he would be like?
Oh, I would have no idea, because I would take the booking, I would take the deposit, and I'd be a no-show.
You'd no-show Malcolm Turnbull.
I would no-show him.
I would think he would no-show you, because do you remember when there was that photo of him and he was giving a homeless guy $5 while he was holding a 50 in the other hand?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I feel like if Malcolm Roberts – so Cherry and I do engage in different forms of sex work, so we have different experience of the industry. So if I had Malcolm Turnbull in the club, I feel like he would be that guy that tries to barter the price. He would go for a dance, but he would barter down the lowest possible price.
Oh, and he,
and then he'd be like,
yeah, and he'd also be one of those adult diaper.
Or he would have one of those fetishes. He looks like he likes feet.
And I'm in no way kink shaming.
No kink shaming. Everything is a safe space. But Malcolm Turnbull definitely has a foot fetish.
Yeah.
He had that weird dog blog. You look back on his like website and you go back, there's a time in his life where he pretended to be his dog and would write blogs. He's a furry.
No, I like furries too much.
Oh, Malcolm Turnbull's a furry. Allegedly. Here at Politics with a Pinup, our legal team has advised us that all claims made today are allegedly. Wow, we're discovering some things about our ex-PM right now, aren't we?
Well, I'd like to get him in the dungeon and do a little bit of edge play, but, you know, he probably edges himself.
Ooh. He was constantly edging when he was in Parliament. You know, he only switched sides. He only was the leader of the Liberal Party because he was like, I want to get there so close, but the Conservatives are going to hold me back. Oh,
such a cuck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord. Well, thank you so much, Cherry. Thank you for joining us today on Politics with a Pin Up.
Thank you very much. I quite enjoyed sitting here and having a little bit of eye candy.
Oh, are you? And that's just our producer, Dave. Thank you so much to Dave of Dave's Video Graveyard. If you haven't already, check out the episode where I featured. We talk about Men in Black, the movie, and it's mainly just me talking about my butthole. Join us next fortnight for episode 2 or part 2 of Australian Politics. And everyone, stay out of trouble. I need a nice asshole because you can't fuck a personality.